Thomas Lords abandoned the comfort of the stretch limousine with reluctance and an unaccustomed sense of foreboding. He usually enjoyed opportunities to talk about his work, not to mention the chance to solicit funding for archaeological programs he believed in and consulted for. But not today. Under the sweltering heat of the Egyptian sun in full midday bloom, he dropped his scarred leather backpack at his feet and gazed at the huge Roman theater that Napoleon Bonaparte's legions had discovered while digging to build a new fortification. Although the Qom al-Dika dig site had been explored for the last 200 years, first by treasure hunters, then by learned men seeking knowledge of ancient times, the Polish-Egyptian mission that had been established there more than 40 years ago continued to make new and astonishing finds. Burrowed into the ground, Qom al-Dika stood as a semicircular amphitheater not far from the train station in Alexandria. Passengers stepping off the platform had only to cross a short distance to peer out into the ancient stage. Cars passed nearby on Nabi Daniel and Huria streets. The ancient and modern worlds lay side by side here. Constructed of 13 tiers of marble that provided seating for up to 800 spectators, with each seat carefully numbered, the theater's history reached deep into the past and throughout the ancient world. Its white marble stones had been quarried in Europe and brought to Africa. Asia Minor had provided the green marble. The red granite had been mined in Aswan. Geometric mosaic designs covered the wings. Roman houses and baths stretched out behind it. The whole complex was a symbol of the global reach of the great empire that had built it. Lords studied the vast stone structure. When Ptolemy was still a young man and his greatest works were ahead of him, Qom al-Dika had been here, hosting plays and musicals and, if some of the inscriptions on the marble columns had been translated correctly, which Lords believed they had, wrestling. He smiled to think that Ptolemy might have sat in those marble seats and worked on his books, or thought about them at least. It would have been incongruous, like a Harvard professor of linguistics attending a world wrestling event. Lords was such a professor, and he did not follow wrestling, but he loved to think that Ptolemy had. Although Lords had seen the place a number of times, the sight of it never failed to stir within him a desire to know more about the people who had lived here during those years when it was new and filled with crowds. The stories they told barely survived these days. So much had been lost when the Royal Library of Alexandria had been destroyed. For a moment, Lords imagined what it must have been like to walk through the halls of the great library. Its collections were reputed to include at least 500,000 scrolls. They supposedly had contained the entire known world's knowledge of the day. Treatises on mathematics, astronomy, ancient maps, animal husbandry, and agriculture. All those subjects had been represented. So had the works of great writers, including the lost plays of Aeschylus, Sophocles, Euripides, Aristophanes, and Menander. Artists of such power that their surviving works were still performed, and more. Men, knowledgeable and clever men, had come from all over to make their contributions to the ancient library and to learn from it. Yet all of that was gone, shattered and burned. Depending on the latest round of politically correct scholarship, the destruction was ordered by either Roman dictator Perpetuo Julius Caesar or Theophilus of Alexandria or Caliph Umar, or maybe all of them, over the course of time. Whoever had been ultimately responsible, all those wonderful writings had burned or crumbled or vanished, along with the secrets and wisdom held within them, at least for now. Lords still hoped that someday, somewhere, a treasure trove of those works, or at least copies of them, might still exist. It was possible that during those perilous years, someone had cared enough to protect the scrolls by hiding them, or by making transcriptions that they hid once the library was destroyed. The desert surrounding this city still held secrets, and the dry, hot sands were wonderful for preserving papyrus scrolls. Such treasures still turned up, often in the hands of rogues, but sometimes under the supervision of archaeologists. Scholars could read only the scrolls that again saw the light of day. Who knew how many more caches were still out there, waiting to be found?
Professor Lords.
He picked up his backpack and turned to see who had spoken his name. Lords knew what the speaker saw. He was a tall man, slender from years of soccer. A short-cropped black goatee framed his strong chin and softened the hard planes of his face. His wavy black hair was long enough to hang in his face and fall over the tips of his ears. Trips to the barber took too much time out of his day, so he went only when he no longer could truly stand to go unshorn. That time was getting close, he realized, brushing hair out of his eyes. He wore dun khaki shorts, a gray khaki shirt, Gore-Tex hiking boots, an Australian Outback hat, and sunglasses. All well broken in and a bit worn around the edges. He looked, he thought, like a working Egyptologist, much different from the tourists and hawkers working the amphitheaters.